Thanks for the opportunity to speak here. So this is going to be a kind of a survey of the various different areas of quantum information where I see this structure appear over and over again, these magic states and magic gates that I'm going to talk about. So I'm going to cover a lot of different topics, kind of maybe a bit superficially, and we can get into it later at the end if you want to discuss some more details. Okay, so I'm going to be talking about D-level states and gates. So why do we care about even moving on from two-level systems, qubits? So what can we gain by looking at qubits? Well, probably nothing very dramatic. It's probably a bad thing to say at the outset of your talk, just say that there's no motivation, but there are enough differences to make it worth looking at. So we do see differences in robustness to noise in quantum computation and key distribution. And also some recent work here by Earl Campbell showed that in the magic state model of quantum computing, so these ancilla-assisted fault tolerance schemes, you actually have increased efficiency for higher dimensional systems. Now, I guess ultimately it depends on whether the benefits that are here in theory are outweighed by the kind of practical difficulties of dealing with higher dimensional systems. I'm sure experimentalists find it more difficult to control qubits as opposed to qubits. And then just from a fundamental point of view, there are lots of interesting mathematical questions that arise when you start looking at higher dimensional systems. We also have new phenomena appearing, so single particle Cochin-Specker type contextuality, you need d equal three to see that. Then you have differences between odd and even dimensional Hilbert space. So when you use the Pauli operators, you see state-independent contextuality. When you have even dimensional systems, but you don't see it for odd dimensional systems. And then you have certain geometrical structures like mutually unbiased bases. They're expected to only exist in certain dimensions. And finally, the structure of state space is vastly more complicated than the block ball that we're used to for qubits. So yeah, I'm going to discuss a family of states and gates that are, I think, interesting and useful in a number of different scenarios. Okay, so I started looking at this a couple of years ago. I just noticed how many times this simple gate kept appearing in quantum information theory in different topics, different tasks. So it's just this rotation about the z-axis. And so one of the most famous applications is that you just use it in a universal gate set. So if you have the Clifford gates, then you add in the pi of rate gate, then you get a universal set of gates. And in teleportation-based universal quantum computing, this arises very naturally as well. It's transversal for Reed-Muller codes, again. It's topologically protected when you have a surface code in 3D. And it rises naturally in secure assisted universal quantum computing. Then if we think about, so we have these Pauli measurement directions, kind of north, south, east, and west. And then if we rotate these Pauli measurement directions by the pi of rate gate, we get new measurement angles. And so these arise when you start looking at measurement-based schemes. So for universal quantum computing, you need these kind of measurement directions. You get the optimal CHSH value when you measure the Bell state. And then it's important as well in the proof of blind universal quantum computing. Okay, so it appears in all these places. What's the structure behind this gate? So if you think about, we have the Pauli group, which everyone is familiar with. And then the Clifford group, which contains it, is the set of unitaries that map the Pauli group into itself. And then the next level of the Clifford hierarchy is we just call it the third level of the Clifford hierarchy, is the set of unitaries that maps the Clifford group into the Pauli group into the Clifford group. Okay. And so lots of important gates in quantum information theory appear in this part of the Venn diagram. And the pi of rate gate is one such gate. So use this as a motivation to look at, generalize this structure to p-level systems. So it's mathematically, it's easier to just focus on prime dimensional systems. So generalized sigma x operator becomes this, sigma z operator becomes this. And then we have displacement operators, which are the Weyl-Heisenberg operators, are essentially products of these with some phase that just makes calculations easier. Okay, so then you can ask the question, okay, what are all the diagonal gates? We had the pi over 8 gate was diagonal in the computational basis. So what are all the diagonal gates from the third level of the Clifford hierarchy? So it turns out that it's equivalent to finding gates that satisfy this equation here. So we have three free parameters. So the Clifford group has this form where it's a semi-direct product of a symplectic group and the Weyl-Heisenberg group. So just this is the label for the symplectic part, and this is the label for the Weyl-Heisenberg part. But the important thing is that there are three free parameters here. And this these can all range over ZP, so the set of integers 0, 1, up to p minus 1. So I can give you an expression to write down a diagonal gate from the third level of the Clifford hierarchy in terms of these things. And then we need to restrict this to be non-zero if you want it to be a non-Clifford diagonal gate. And it turns out that, you know, these diagonal gates, obviously they're going to commute with each other, so they form an abelian group, and they actually have kind of strange behavior for small prime dimensions, and then things settle down after p equals 3. So they have this structure for all other primes. So depending on the task that you're trying to do, it might be convenient to have your magic gates parameterized in this form, okay, to see what Clifford gate they get mapped into. But if you just want to look at the representation of the gate, then we can just write it out as a cubic polynomial. Okay, so we can convert between these two representations, but just in terms of a matrix, it's more convenient to write it out as a cubic polynomial. Okay, so again, we have three free parameters here, A, B, and C, and if you want this to be a cubic polynomial, then A had better not be zero. So again, it's the same parameter counting that we had up here. And again, we have strange behavior for the small prime dimensions, and then things settle down after that. So there's a famous quote in mathematics that all primes are odd except two, which is the oddest prime of all. And then when you work with the Pauli group, you kind of see this manifested a lot. And then, well, because of the strange behavior for p equals 3, I'm going to say that's the second oddest prime. Okay, so you do see some funny behavior for those small prime dimensions. Okay, so now let's think about the geometry associated with all of this. So here we have the Bloch sphere and the Pauli eigenstates. There are 6 of them. So if we join them together, they form an octahedron. So this is like a 3D object. Then we think about, okay, if we apply our pi over 8 gate to this plus state, then we bring it to this point here. And this already has a name in the quantum information literature. It's called the H-type magic state. And we can see geometrically, it's like it's along the equator of the Bloch sphere, and it's the furthest point away from the octahedron in the equator. And then when we move to higher dimensional systems, we're just going to say that the analogous state to this is this F, indexed by A, B, and C, which are these coefficients in the cubic polynomial. Okay, so this is our generalized magic state. So then we can think about, okay, what's the geometry? How does that change as we go to higher dimensions? So in all cases, these magic states are eigenvectors of Clifford gates, which is what something that we had here. These generalized H-type states seem to be the most non-stabilizer states in the equatorial plane. So I say seem to be, but you can do numerics for 2, 3, 5, 7, and you can check that it's true. Convex geometry like this, you have this half-space enumeration problem where you have a very lengthy calculation to perform, which gets, you know, drastically worse as dimension increases. So at a certain stage, you have to just stop your numerics. Similarly, the gates, the magic gates, seem to be the most non-Clifford unitaries. So What I mean by that is you can create an analogous structure for operations as we have here for states. So here you use the Jamolkowski isomorphism and you write out all the Clifford gates as points in some high dimensional space. And then you try and find, okay, what's the unitary that's furthest outside this object? And again, for small dimensions, it appears that these magic gates are the ones that are furthest outside. Again, we run into problems with the half-space enumeration problem, so we can't say this for definite for higher dimensional systems.
Sorry, to use Jamolkowski isomorphism, I think we need something with bipartite structures.
So you can encode the unitary in the higher dimensional state, and then just the same way that you have, you can do convex geometry with states of any dimension.
I'm wondering, I mean, how are you using the Jamolkowski isomorphism?
So I'm just turning the unitary into a state and then looking at the geometry of states. Yeah. Okay, so that's kind of the structure and the geometry of these magic states and gates. Now let's try and see where they find applications. Okay, so the first application is in this search for Seq POVMs. So in dimension n, a Seq POVM is a set of n squared vectors, which, since we're interested in Weyl-Heisenberg covariant Seq POVMs, means that there's one particular vector and we can just apply the Weyl-Heisenberg group and then we can get all the other vectors in our set. And then we want these vectors, their projectors, to be proportional to the identity. And we want them to have the same inner product with each other. Okay, so the informational completeness comes from the fact that there's n squared of them. And then the symmetry comes from here. So it turns out for qubits, it seems to be very simple. This state here, which is known as the T-type magic state, is actually a fiducial vector. So you can create your Seq POVM by just operating on that with the Pauli operators. But this is very deceptive, the simplicity of the solution for P equals 2. When you get to P equals 7, we have some horrendous expression that looks like this. And if I was to write it out, it would go all the way along the wall, probably wrap around. So they found analytic solutions to these things, but they look really ugly. And it's hard to kind of wrap your head around what's the exact structure. Obviously, they look very elegant in this representation. But when you write them out like this, they look really mysterious and ugly. But they are believed to exist in all dimensions, and they've been found numerically in a lot of dimensions. So Zauner's conjecture is that you can find a fiducial vector in a particular eigenspace, which is one of the eigenspaces of an order 3 Clifford unitary. So it has this symplectic component, and then it's order 3, so that the third power of it is equal to the identity when you choose your phases correctly. So this operator has 3 eigenspaces, and then the one we're interested in is this one. So this is the Zauner eigenspace, and it has this size here. So obviously, if it was a one-dimensional eigenspace, the problem would be solved. We don't have to worry about it. The fact that it's this size, we need to try and find some more structure about it. So our results apply here when n is equal to 3k plus 1, but also only in the case when it's a prime of this form. So p is equal to 3k plus 1. Okay, and again, the results in this area there are just hints here and there about, you know, different angles of attacking this problem. And one of them comes from trying to see what similarities there are between Seq POVMs and mutually unbiased bases. So it turns out that for p greater than 3, the magic states, these f-kets that I discussed earlier, They coincide with the second most famous MUB construction that's out there in the quantum information literature, this ALTOP MUB construction. It comes from, I think, signal processing originally. It looks, it has a similar form, but you need to tweak the definition a bit. But so this is just the definition of a mutually unbiased basis. So if you're in the same basis, then vectors are either, you know, the same or orthogonal. And then if you're in different bases, they have an overlap of 1 over root p with each other. And then if you set a here, so you no longer have a cubic polynomial, then you get, you recover the standard mutually unbiased bases, which I think are attributed to Ivanovich. And these are actually stabilizer eigenstates. But for all other values of A, these are the ALTOP MUBs. Okay, so you add in the computational basis along with these states. Okay, so when you see that by writing it down in this way, it's obviously, it's clear that standard and ALTOP MUBs are unitarily equivalent to each other. So it's possible a priori that they might not have been. And the unitary that takes them to each other is these magic gates. Then in this paper with Kate Blanchfield, Ingmar Bengtsson, and Earl Campbell, we did lots of counting arguments and looked at the structure of these things. But here's just a summary of some of the relevant facts. So the set of vectors that comprise the standard MUB is an orbit of the Clifford group. For a fixed value of A not equal to 0, the ALTOP MUB is an orbit of the Weyl-Heisenberg group. So basically, give me one set of vectors from here, and if I apply the Weyl-Heisenberg group to it, I'll get all the other ones. And then the complete set of this many magic states forms a single orbit under the Cliffords when p is equal to 2 mod 3, but three distinct orbits when p is equal to 1 mod 3. So this is pretty kind of surprising behavior, and it comes about from something in number theory called cubic residues. So it turns out that you can, Cliffords can take you to from one magic state to another magic state that's in the same residue class for cubic residues. So when you're in a dimension of this form, then the non-zero elements of your prime field are partitioned into three different equivalence classes. So for instance, if I have a magic state with A equal to 1, a Clifford can take me to 5, 8, or 12, but it can't take me to any of these other ones. And this has actually operational meaning because the discrete Wigner function and the mana changes when we go in between these different equivalence classes. So superficially, a state from here and a state from here and a state from here all look the same, but they actually have different depolarizing thresholds, different negativity, different mana, and so on.
Can you explain that first point under orbits? I mean, the Clifford group acts transitively on the stabilizer space. What does it mean that the MUB is an orbit of it?
So if you take the set of vectors in the standard MUB and apply the Clifford group, you just permute among them.
You get a lot of other vectors that are not.
This is for a single qubit.
Okay. So then all the vectors are okay, just all the stabilizers.
It's only for prolonged dimension.
Yeah.
So then all the vectors that appear are just all stabilizers.
Yeah. Okay, so we still haven't really said how this helps with the seek POVM conjecture. And it certainly doesn't solve it, but what it does is it gives us an analogous structure to something that's already known in the literature. So for p equal to 3, I think it was a talk here at PI, Lane Houston showed that this incident structure called the Hess configuration was closely related to the seek POVM in that dimension. So the Hess configuration is 9 points and 12 lines, where each point belongs to 4 line. Each line goes through 3 points. And then the notation for such an incident structure is this. And then the relationship with MUBs and SEEKs is that these lines can be associated with Zauner subspaces whose complements are 12 MUB vectors. And then the points of intersection between the subspaces, where they overlap, they correspond to the 9 SEEK vectors in that dimension. So when you go to P equals 3K plus 1, you find that there are this many magic states in that dimension, this many Zauner subspaces, and then they also have this kind of an incident structure as well. So every Zauner subspace contains this many magic states. Every magic state belongs to P Zauner subspaces, and then we get a kind of a configuration structure again. So again, we haven't solved the problem in P equals 3K plus 1. Just understand a little bit more about these mysterious Zauner subspaces where these fiducial vectors are supposed to live.
So when counting Zauner subspaces, you mean conjugates under the Clifford, or? In the first place, Zauner wrote down a very specific matrix.
Yeah, yeah. So it's conjugates under Clifford's, yeah, exactly.
So
yeah.
You're
yeah.
counting
conjugates. Yeah. Yeah. Okay, so let's move on to the next application, which is in non-locality. So here we have the Bell inequality in the normal form that you see it in textbooks. And the local hidden variable maximum is 2. So then if we create a Bell pair, and then we measure with measurements that look like this, then we get a value of 2 root 2, which is greater, and so you know, violate Bell inequality. So these measurements that Bob are performing, kind of sometimes known as like the Hadamard basis. So I'm just going to pull out a unitary from Bob's measurements. So now Alice and Bob both have stabilizer measurements, and they're measuring a non-stabilizer state. Okay, so this is like the Gemmel-Kausky state associated with that unitary. And, you know, I guess maybe computer scientists prefer to phrase these Bell inequalities as non-local games. So it becomes a question of maximizing a quantity that looks like this. So this is a conditional probability of Alice's and Bob's outcomes given their measurement settings. And you have this winning condition that A plus B is equal to X times Y. If you try and make this quantity as large as possible, then that's equivalent to trying to violate this Bell inequality as much as possible. So now let's just reshuffle this Bell inequality a little bit to try and get it in a form that's amenable to generalization. So it's equivalent to just saying that this Bell operator has an expectation less than or equal to 2. The Bell operator has this form, which is just the pth root of unity. So we're just going to call that omega, the standard notation. So now we can generalize this to q-dits. Okay, so now we have expression of exactly the same form. And now the spectrum of our observables are going to be the roots of unity. So this was originally looked at by G. I'll put the reference up at the end. But they defined this Bell operator. They found that the local hidden variable max was 6. But when you create this Bell operator and actually maximize it, you can get up as far as 6.4. So you get another violation of a Bell inequality. But once again, the optimal setting comes from applying a magic gate to one half of your Bell pair. Again, when you go to higher dimensions, you have a similar thing. You can cast it as a non-local game. But here, now your winning condition is that the sum of the outcomes and the product of the measurement settings, the sum of those two quantities should equal to zero. So you can show that for all prime dimension, these magic gates applied here actually give you the optimal strategy for maximizing this Bell operator. So this continues the analogy that we had for p equals 2. Now, what's interesting is that the maximization of this quantity is actually bounded above by this expression here, 4p. But if I was to just look at information causality, then it says that the maximum of that expression is this here. So there's a square root p factor of difference between these two things. This is quite restricted because I'm restricted to using Pauli observables. Whereas here, this is in the more general kind of computer science framework where we just allowed to use any set of projectors that we want in our non-local game. So it's interesting to see that there's such a big difference between the restricted case and the unrestricted case. And this is not the case, obviously, in p equals 2, because we can achieve 2 root 2 using Pauli measurements. So proving that these magic gates are actually optimal is kind of interesting. Some more stuff comes out of it. So just some notation first. So I'm going to say that the vth vector in the bth basis is given by this notation here. So b for basis is at the bottom of the ket here. And I'm using these Weil-Heisenberg operators. So this is x and then different values of different powers of z. So Alice and Bob's measurement are both of this form, x, xz, and so on up to x to the power of x times z to the p minus 1. And we can write that out in ket form if you want. So anytime you see a fraction like this, just think of the inverse modulo p. And then one result from number theory, the Weil bound, says that polynomial f of degree n over a prime field satisfies this bound here, provided p does not divide n. OK, so how does this relate to what I was just saying? So this Bell operator that I talked about two slides ago, it actually, under a CNOT gate or a CSUM, which is the generalization for qudits, it becomes a tensor product of a single qudit operator and a projector onto a pure stabilizer state. So maximizing this Bell operator, which is just getting the maximum eigenvalue of it, is actually equivalent to maximizing this single qudit operator. And what's more, this single qudit operator has a very simple expression where it's just one vector from each of the bases that I talked about on the previous slide. So the vector is given by this expression here. So it turns out that magic states, are given by this exact expression here, form an eigenbasis for this operator. And then this quantity, which is what I'm looking for ultimately, is given by the inner product, which is this. Turns out that this sum is actually the same in each term. So it's just p times this overlap. But this overlap has the form of a exponential sum with a cubic polynomial. So by the bound we had on the previous page, it's bounded above by 4p. So I still have to justify why I can go from here to here. I'll do that on the next couple of slides. It's because these magic states have another nice property. And so there's some conjecture that I don't really fully understand, but it describes the distribution of this quantity with respect to the the bound as p tends towards infinity. So I believe it's supposed to be equidistributed as p tends towards infinity, which would imply that the bound, the 4p bound, is saturated as p goes towards infinity. Okay, so that's how I established the bound of 4p, and I said here that there was this interesting property that the overlap, the sum of the overlaps is just p times one of the overlaps. That's because magic states obey a very nice property called balancedness, or almost balancedness, maybe. So there was a recent paper by Wooders and co-authors that motivated the search for states that look the same in every basis of a complete set of mutually unbiased bases. And in that paper, they argued that states with this property could be argued as being analogous to harmonic oscillator eigenstates, where they're symmetric in phase space. And so it doesn't matter kind of what direction you measure. Here, we have a similar thing. The mutually unbiased bases kind of define the direction, and it doesn't matter which bases you choose, you're always going to get the same list of probabilities. And then besides this analogy, then they also have uses. They are automatically minimum certainty states, which are important for a quantum key distribution. So they have nice properties, but this is, being balanced is a stricter condition than being a minimum uncertainty state. And so maybe the best way to think about this balancedness is just to decompose an arbitrary operator in terms of a complete set of mutually unbiased bases. So for p equals 3, we have 4 bases. And then we have the overlaps with these projectors from the different bases form these coefficients here. So in particular, if k is a normalized density operator, then these columns correspond to probability distributions from each of the different bases. So then a balanced state, here's an example of one, looks like this. So the probability distributions are the same in each of the bases. Magic states have a related property, it's a bit weaker. So they have a uniform distribution on the computational basis, but then they're balanced on the remaining bases. So we can show, using the structure of these magic states, that this is always true. So for arbitrary prime dimension, for arbitrary magic state, these have flat distributions in the computational basis and the same distribution in every other basis. And moreover, we can prove exactly what permutation occurs as we move from basis to basis. So this expression here tells you, okay, if I have, you know, a certain number here, then depending on the magic state, which is B and A here, then that's going to appear in one of these other positions here in subsequent bases. So knowing this kind of decomposition of states is important. It crops up in cryptography, entropic uncertainty relations, and so on. So it turns out that the maximum entry of a column is related to the min entropy with respect to, so because this is a probability distribution, we can apply entropic stuff to it. And so different entropies, Renyi entropy, min entropy, and so on. Different ones have different applications. Renyi and min entropy seem to be very important for quantum key distribution. And then what's also important is looking at entropies of states averaged over different sets of bases, different sets of measurement bases. So minimizing the average min entropy across a number of bases involves trade-offs. So for instance, I could have 1 here, 0 here, and 0 here, but then I'd have to have flat distributions everywhere else. But if I want to have a high average min entropy across all these bases, then it seems like magic states are about as well as you can do. So I haven't proven that, but it seems to be a fairly plausible conjecture. And then this also seems to hint at something that's already been known in quantum key distribution for years, is that the most informative eavesdropping basis for Eve in the BB84 scheme is given by a basis of magic states. So this is called the Breitbart basis. And this gives Eve the most information about the messages that Alice is sending to Bob. So it's an open question maybe whether these generalized magic states also have these nice eavesdropping properties. So that's pretty much it. Open questions are, okay, so a lot of this was, all of what I said was just for prime dimensions, but a lot of it probably could be made to work over power of prime dimension, just using finite fields instead. Also think this nice structure that I've talked about, the balancedness and so on, could mean that these states find applications in quantum random access code, eavesdropping, entropic uncertainty relations, and so on. And then this relationship between cubic polynomials and the third level of the Clifford hierarchy, I'd be interested in seeing what about using higher order polynomials and or higher levels of the Clifford hierarchy to see if they also give states and gates that have nice symmetry properties. So this is a paper from a couple of years ago that had a lot of the geometrical stuff that I talked about at the start. This paper has the discussion of the all-top MUBs and the CPOVMs, and then I'm finishing some stuff to do with the non-locality and the balancedness of those magic states. And finally, if you're interested in the Bell operator I was talking about, it was first talked about by G, and then re-examined by Liang et al. And the information causality result comes from a paper from last year by Bavarian and Shore. Okay, that's it. Thank you.
Questions from Mark?
So, I mean, you specifically mentioned about the MUB states and the six states and the orbits under the Clifford group. I mean, do you know just for the magic states that you're talking about, are they related or fall into classes?
Sorry, so I might have confused you. So the all-top MUB states are exactly the magic states.
Sorry, you mean a single set of them? You mean a single MUB, it's not...
Yeah, so, okay, you can... So you can start with a set of magic states and then apply.
So here you can only consider prong combination.
Yeah.
So in this case, there's only one state in
MUB. No, I understand that. But what I'm asking is the set of all magic states.
Mm-hmm.
That's exactly the same as this. You're saying.
Yeah. So they get partitioned into different MUBs, different all top MUBs.
So it's the idea you pick a magic state, apply the lab, and then the orbit under the Heisenberg group is a MUB?
Yeah. So when you have to append another basis from the standard basis. So, I mean, here I just had the computational basis. It was the one from the standard basis. And then the magic states comprise the rest of the all-top MUB. Yeah, that's just treating the Z basis as special, but you can go along and treat the XZ basis as special and then have the all-top MUB defined with respect to that.
Okay, sorry. So I guess it's the third point is the answer to my question. I was thinking about the all magnitudes.
Okay.
But you're right, okay.
Any
anything else?
So you mentioned that the information causality bound is vector square root the higher. Is that known to be even to be saturated, or is it believed to be saturated by quantum theory?
So the only I think I can't quite remember the results. I think asymptotically, there's not expected to be a big separation between classical and quantum bounds. But for small dimensions, there was some numerics done here where they relaxed the restriction that you had to do Pauli measurements. And they were able to obviously get higher than the bound I talked about, but they didn't seem to be saturating the information causality bound.
Nothing else then? Let's keep reading.